There's an old proverb that says, may you live in interesting times. Boy, do we have that in spades now. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
You know, I've always wondered, I don't think that's a proverb. It was supposed to be a blessing. But honestly, I've never thought that that was anything but a curse.
Well, it is a curse. Basically, the vast majority of people, Chuck, and I think I can speak for us and probably for most of our listeners, want to live in an era of peace and security and tranquility and normalcy and routine and you name it. They don't want things changing much. However, wow. 2020 basically decided to take that proverb and put it on steroids. We've had everything so far from weather issues to, well, obviously the whole ongoing saga, I guess I should say.
Shall we call it COVID idiocy?
Well, you can call it that. I think I just call it pandemic panic, okay? Because I saw a graph. I'm glad you said something about this because I saw a graph just the other day, and it was a tracking graph of the cases and deaths that had been taking place going all the way back to the early days in March when this whole thing got started.
And, supposedly.
And you see this graph, and of course it's a big hump in the middle, and then it starts going all the way down until it's like very small at the very end. But then there's an arrow at the end, and it says this is where the governor indicated mandatory masking.
Right.
And it's like, okay, and the height difference between the spike in the graph and the lower part of the graph where we are now is statistically significant, you could say.
Yeah, I know. You're being facetious. It's more than statistically significant. It is essentially George McGovern versus Richard Nixon in 1972.
Let's paint a better picture. It's Ronald Reagan against Walter Mondale in 1980. where Ronald Reagan won 49 states plus the territories against Walter Mondale winning Minnesota.
I think Walter Mondale didn't even win Minnesota.
Well, he won one state. I'm pretty sure
Massachusetts.
I'm pretty sure it was Minnesota. But we can go to the Wayback Machine and look it up later. But he only won one state. So you talk about pretty much a clean sweep.
But
that's this graph here. This was a graph about Ohio, about the number of cases and deaths that we supposedly have. And I say that with a grain of salt because we still are completely unclear, and I'm not sure it'll ever get cleared up, how accurate that data really has been from the get-go. We know that a lot of the models that things were based on were widely erroneous. We also know that you had a philosophy in the governing quarters of our state, i.e. our Governor Mike DeWine and his former health director, now health advisor, Amy Acton, who had great reticence about admitting that maybe they were following some bad information and bad data and wouldn't do anything to change it. They just kept plowing along as long as we're doing these things, everything's going to be okay. DeWine is still doing this.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, we are recording this on Thursday afternoon. It's T-minus 5 hours and 6 minutes and counting until mandatory masking for every person moving on the face of the state of Ohio, except for kids under 10 years old, I think. And there are a couple of other minor exceptions, but the problem is they'll put the exceptions in about, well, the government won't force you to do this, but we'll take away the licenses from businesses who allow you to come in without a mask on. We're already finding that happening.
Yes.
I'm getting reports from a number of folks who I'm associated with of their having difficulties in being able to get services or things for people like their children who have significant medical issues and can't wear a mask because of breathing issues or asthma or, autism, other things where the mask is contraindicated for their medical conditions, but that the government has gotten the business community in such a tizzy about the potential of government jackbooted thugs under the auspices of the Ohio Investigative Unit coming into their business and fining them thousands of dollars per event for a customer not having a mask on in the store. Now I looked at the Cleveland Plain Dealer. I think this was on Monday or Tuesday, Chuck. And there was a listing across the state, and there was about 14 or 15 businesses across the state, including nightclubs and restaurants and other places, that were being fined by the state government, and the potential of that fine leading to the review of whether or not they can hold on to licenses that they have to operate, i.e. if you're a club like a liquor license, or right. if you're a restaurant like licenses to serve food, being threatened if they do not force their customers to follow the reopen Ohio guideline, reopen responsible Ohio guidelines, which means that if you walk into a restaurant, you have to stay masked and stay 6 feet away from everybody else until you actually sit down at your table and actually start consuming your food. But and you can't, if you have food or drink, you can't get up and walk around.
It's an absurdity.
Yeah,
it's on its face.
It's nuts. Yeah. I mean,
first of all, I know people are going to disagree with me, and that's fine. People disagree with me all the time.
Well, if they all agreed with us,
there'd be no need to do this program. Yeah, we wouldn't have to do this anymore. Yeah, we could all go our separate ways.
So if you want to quit listening to us on this radio station, just send us notes that you all agree with us completely,
right.
and the station will probably fill a slot with somebody else.
I've done some looking into this, I'm trained in science, so I know how to read a scientific paper. When you throw the statistics at me with the row numbers and all that stuff, I get a little shaky.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be quite honest. But I can read a bar graph just like everybody else. And when I'm doing the studies on mask data,
sure,
I can tell you this, that a study I just read that was done in 2015, this is not the one everybody's talking about. This is a different study that was done with trained medical personnel. Basically said that cloth masks,
yes, sir,
are worse than nothing.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Essentially, for this reason. Now, this was based on medical personnel and supposedly trained in the use of masks. Now, and also, this has to do with viruses, not bacteria. And there is a vast, vast, vast difference, size-wise, transmission-wise, all that stuff. What they discovered was that the control group, which was a group that had both masked and unmasked people, essentially had a lower rate of infection than the people who just wore cloth masks. And essentially, the N95s,
mm-hmm.
with a virus, was statistically insignificant,
right,
in the protection. In other words, the viruses penetrate the mask. Well, all you have to do is know that a virus is, that COVID is about 0.1 micron. And a micron is 1/1,000,000th of a meter. Okay.
Yes.
2.5 centimeters is an inch.
Right.
So that's 2/100 of a meter is an inch. And a micron is significantly smaller than that.
Yes,
it's about 10,000 times smaller than half an inch. So that's how small it is. A bacteria tend to be about between 5 and 100 times mm-hmm. larger than that.
Yep.
So what's happening? Masks do a great job of keeping bacteria from penetrating. They don't do such a hot job for keeping viruses from penetrating, and there's a reason for that. It's the size and the fact that, Barry, have you ever worn one? I know you don't wear one almost virtually any place. I'll wear one if I want to go someplace, and that's the only way I can get in. Like Menards, if I go uh-huh. over to Menards, they'll stop you at the door and say, you either got to have one or you got to buy one at the desk. You can't come in. So I carry one over there. What do you do the whole time you wear it?
You're messing with it.
You're
with your hands.
Fooling with it with yeah. your hands. You're tugging on it. It itches. Your glasses are fogging up. It slips down. Most of the people that I've seen wearing them, I'm laughing because Both the mouth and the nose are uncovered.
Uh-huh.
They're wearing it like a fake beard.
Well, okay. Let's stop right there, Chuck. We got a statewide mandate going into effect tonight on Thursday. By the time you hear this on Saturday, it'll have been up for a couple of days or either that, or a judge will overturn it, one of the two, because I expect that fully to come happen pretty soon, too. But there is nothing in the mask mandates, whether it's the state level or at the local level, that prescribes how you must wear that mask.
That's right.
And so, frankly, when I see people putting it on, they've got it below their chin, I'm kind of like, good for you, bucko.
Yes,
you know, it's like, and of course, people immediately, the social media Karens out there will be squalling at me because I'm evil and I want people to die. And let me just be quite frank about it. I don't really have a choice in that matter. People are going to die because God has determined that they're going to die. And if they die from a microbe that's that small, or if they die from getting hit by a flipping semi-truck,
yes.
They're just as dead.
Yeah.
And it isn't up to me. Okay, Chuck, if it's my child, if it's my loved one, or if it's somebody I deeply care about, and I see them about to get hit by a Peterbilt, I'm probably going to try to throw myself in front of it and push them out of the way. Okay, great, fine, you know?
Yeah.
If it's somebody I don't even know, have never talked to, and am basically passing like a ship in the night because I'm doing something else, and it's a microbe that nobody sees, nobody knows where it is, I'm not necessarily going to sit there and strap myself into a mask in order to protect them. Let them...
Right.
Folks, we are all responsible for our own health.
Exactly.
Okay? Nobody else is responsible for your health except you. If you don't like smoking, don't be around smokers. Okay? If you're worried about consuming foods that might cause you to be unhealthy, don't buy processed foods. Okay? If you're very concerned about whether or not you're going to catch a deadly disease called COVID-19 because somebody else might not be wearing a piece of cloth across their nose, check your privilege, as they're saying now. Check your privilege. Because the whole point is that if that mask is so doggone important, wear it yourself. And if that mask cannot save you because somebody else isn't also wearing a mask, then wear two of them.
Yeah, this is the whole point of these studies. The fact is, you're more likely to get the virus if you wear the mask.
I have been seeing that. And it's because,
and it's a very good reason if you think about it, if you think through it.
Mm-hmm.
It's because
Are you asking me to use logic?
Critical
and
thinking.
Sense and think in an analytical fashion?
Right.
Well, you know, you're going against all the great advice that we're getting from the governor and everybody else is just to do it his way.
Well, transmission of this virus is essentially hands to face.
Yes, it is, isn't it?
It is.
Just like a cold virus.
Therefore, like any other virus that, except those that are transmitted by contact. Things like the AIDS virus that are...
Which are required by sexual contact.
Sexual
or something
contact.
Like that. Or exchanging of fluids.
People that are constantly touching their face because of these masks,
yeah.
And the mask does not stop the virus.
No, that's the whole key, folks.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop it. It isn't reducing your potential to be exposed to it. It's not even providing you even prophylactic protection against it.
Because you are accumulating viruses if in the right environment, and we aren't in the right environment, but in the right environment, you actually accumulate them on the outside. And then as you inhale, mm-hmm. they will come through.
Yeah.
So what you're doing is, if you're in an environment where there's a heavy viral load, and unless you're hanging out in a facility where there's a lot of illness going on,
like a nursing home, or a prison, yeah,
you're not gonna your chances are extremely low. Now, when I say that, what they're finding out now. There are studies out there that are indicating that in order to shed this virus, in other words, to be a spreader, you have to have an active case and you have to be coughing and sneezing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if you're not coughing and sneezing and your temperature isn't over 101, you're not shedding.
wait a minute. Would you consider? You've got a scientific background, okay? Mm-hmm. So I'm looking to you because I'm a layman. All right. Would you consider the acts of coughing and sneezing to be symptoms?
Well, there are consequences of the symptoms, which is mucus production and, well, in both cases, okay. mucus production.
But what I'm saying is, if you're asymptomatic,
yep.
does that mean you're not coughing and sneezing this
That's
stuff?
That's what it means. Even if you...
But didn't our governor, isn't he using tests that are coming back positive on asymptomatic individuals as an excuse for shutting down yes. the state because, oh, we have this huge spike in... You notice they're not talking about spikes in hospitalizations or deaths.
Cases.
We now have this spike in cases. And it's like, you're testing more. As a matter of fact, I just saw an article that said that the number of the testing labs are getting overwhelmed by the number of kits that are being sent back to them right now. And there is a question about the kits, where they, especially some that come from certain places in the world like China, that they have been showing up to 70%+ false positives.
And false negatives.
And false negatives. But I think the 70% number was on the ones that they knew were false, but were testing false positive.
Listen, we're setting ourselves up. First of all, if you feel good wearing a mask and you feel protected wearing a mask, wear the mask.
Please do so.
Wear it.
No, you don't have any of us telling you you need to take your mask off.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the idea that the governor is going to mandate something that is actually more dangerous for us to use, and I realize that that is a controversial topic. I don't care. I have read enough of the studies to know that masks, especially the cloth masks, and by the way, I'm a businessman. What do I get from the Bureau of Workers' Compensation? I get a pack of cloth masks to hand out to my quote-unquote employees, which is me and my wife, so we're not wearing masks around the place because we're the only ones here. That may be a bad admission to make. I may have to cut that out. Oh, wait, I won't. So I've got like 35 cloth masks in a plastic bag. I keep one in my pocket.
Now be careful, don't sell them online because then the attorney general will come and like get you for price gouging.
Probably.
Which you know what? I think the AG has to go back to those poor couple of people that they're running for racketeering on because they early on they bought a bunch of masks and then they were selling them at a nice profit. I think they need to go back and apologize to them.
All right.
Frankly, this is ridiculous. But, okay, Chuck, you're right. You've done a lot of studying on the mask and things. I've also done a lot of study, but I've done it in a different place. The studying that I've been doing about this whole thing is called the Ohio Constitution.
Yes, very good.
And the laws of the state of Ohio. And do you know what a funny thing happened on the way to this mask mandate? It's unconstitutional.
Oh, of course it is.
Because, folks, in Ohio, just like at the federal level, we have what is called a Republican form of government. Small r, not that the Republican Party controls everything. And we'll talk more about how they're not in control here shortly. But we have a small r Republican form of government, which means that we have a government that has branches, and those branches have authorities, and those authorities are reserved powers to those branches. And they are, we have checks and balances against a branch going rogue. Just like at the federal level, Chuck, the only branch of the Ohio government that can create a law is called the legislature. It's the General Assembly.
Right.
Your House and Senate members that you, the people of Ohio, vote to put into office. You also vote to put somebody else into office, too. It's called a governor. The governor, Mike DeWine, right now is the chief executive of the state of Ohio, and there is a constitutional right for him to govern and faithfully execute the laws of the state. Now runs into the problem. There has been at no point in time, probably not after either, of this particular quote-unquote pandemic crisis, where the General Assembly, past, present, or possibly a future one, have given the executive branch the ability to make a law. Or, specifically, they have never written a law that says that people must wear masks in public during a health crisis.
Right.
That is a major problem, Chuck, because what the governor is doing by order now, and he's trying to use that 3701.13 code section, he's wrung it as dry as he possibly can, he's trying to use it as his cover for going beyond the intent of the legislature, for going beyond the letter of the law, and basically writing up a law himself as the chief executive. Well, there's another little provision in Ohio's source books. Do you know that even though we don't have the right of recall, we do have the right of petition for the people of Ohio to petition the courts to remove the governor for violation of his office? Because if the legislature won't do it by impeachment, there is that possibility option as well. But folks, what I'm saying right now is the governor's actions in creating these mass mandates, both at the, you know, doing this county breakdown garbage where it was just the slow boil of the frog in the pot until he got to where he wanted to be, which was everybody's going to wear a mask. Now, folks, that's not even at full boil. What DeWine is after is as soon as a vaccine is cleared without testing in order for things to happen, he'll mandate that every citizen in Ohio, in order to conduct business, go to school, move, live, or have your being, is going to have to submit to getting a vaccination with this COVID vaccine, which, Charles, as we know from other vaccines and how they're made, they're mostly made with what? The actual virus.
Yeah. There are what's called an attenuated virus.
Live attenuated viruses, but it's still a live virus.
Right.
So basically what the governor is going to ultimately end up doing, unless he's stopped, is he is going to try to force, and of course, Chuck, we're going to talk about some corruption that's going on here in a minute, but can you imagine the amount of money that is going to make for certain pharmaceutical companies who hold the patents for this particular miracle drug that supposedly, now that we've got everybody scared to death and we've forced them all to wear masks, we can easily ramp them all up into beating their fellow man over the head in order to submit to a medical invasion of their bodies and shoot them up with a vaccine, supposedly, that's made with the live deadly COVID virus, and that we will not even know and have any kind of longitudinal studies to see if it has any effect or not, other than counter effects.
Well, the president has come out and said he would volunteer to be one of the first to take the thing. Okay, whatever, you can do that.
You go right ahead.
I will not be in line for that.
But you saw what he said. Volunteer.
Yes.
Trump is not stupid. He's sending a signal, okay? He's sending a little bit of a signal right now. You think he's sending it out to a number of these governors in these states, like DeWine. You know, you're going to be really hard-pressed because, you know what, all it's going to take at the federal level is for the Department of Health and Human Services to write a little rule or regulation that basically says that no person in the United States can be forced through any means in order to submit to a medical intervention such as a vaccine shot.
Yeah. One of the things that concerns me, attenuated viruses, especially, these are being rushed into production.
Yes, they are.
Rushed. Every time we rush a vaccine into production, and I'm thinking the swine flu vaccine in 1977?
Yeah, 77 or 78.
Yeah. Major problems. Major problems.
Oh, yeah.
In that swine flu vaccination in the late 70s, Guillain-Barré. People died from Guillain-Barré syndrome, and very few people ever got the swine flu. In fact, I think there's one confirmed death, and it was from the original case. It's been a long time since I read that, but I knew people who were nursing students who took that thing and were sick for months.
Yeah.
That was a nightmare. And a lot of these things, you know, they keep saying, I read an article the other day that said there's one... I forget where it was. It was under test. I think it was in Britain or someplace.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying, oh, we got a quote-unquote immune, we got a strong immune response. Well, Guillain-Barré syndrome
is a strong,
immune response.
Yes.
And so is a nonspecific
it's called an
encephalitis.
Okay, and folks, what that's called, and learn this nomenclature because it's going to come in handy, it's called an adverse reaction.
Yes.
The word adverse means it didn't do what we expected it to do. It did something totally different and totally harmful to an individual.
Yeah. And watch out, because what's going to happen is I can almost lay this out. They will attempt to make it mandatory, and the first thing that Congress will do is attempt to since it is basically going to be done, now people don't know this exists, but if it's done under the auspices of the Patriot Act, drug companies are automatically immune from suit from adverse reactions.
Yep.
And since this is going to be called a national security issue, it's not. It's a virus. It's a bad virus, but it's not as bad as, for instance, H1N1, which was under the previous administration.
Oh, you mean the last time we shut down the entire country? Wait a minute.
That didn't happen. Yeah.
Didn't. Okay.
Hey, you know what happened there? Everybody got herd immune. They got herd immunity. What does that mean? We all got exposed. We all developed antibodies. Not all of us, but a large enough percentage that the other people won't get it.
I just heard something on the way in here today as we were getting ready to record that it looks like the progressive left is trying to even spin that. They don't like the term herd immunity because it's now being used against their game plan. Now they're talking about mass infection models, which means they want to shoot
immunity.
They want to shoot you up with an untested vaccine in order to get there.
Yeah, folks, I can't urge you not to do this because it would be giving you medical advice. I'm not going to take the darn thing. And if that means I can't fly, it means I can't fly. If it means I can't go to certain states like New York, it means I can't go to certain states like New York.
What's in New York anyway that's worth going for?
Yeah.
Especially under their current government.
Well, current government, the government of the last 75 years.
75 years, yeah. Okay, yeah. Your point's well taken.
Three quarters of a century. It's been pretty bad.
Your point's well taken.
But the fact is that please open your eyes and do more research before you just rush right out and say, give me that shot.
But you know that there are going to be herds of people, let's use that phrase, herds of people that are going to believe that, oh, as long as I get the vaccine, everything will be just fine and we can go back to being normal again. You don't realize what kind of potential Pandora's box of nightmare, medical, personal, societal nightmares may be opened up for us rushing headlong because we're being driven by the fear that's being driven by somebody's agenda.
Well, look, nobody wants to die of a virus that essentially gives you pneumonia and gives you a long, drawn-out, nasty death. Nobody wants that. The problem is that the people that, for the most part, that was going to happen to, happened in March.
You know, I'm glad you said something about that, because there's another piece that came across the news source I was listening to today that basically said that now they're starting to believe, and they actually have data that they're starting to go back and look at. They're doing regression data.
Yeah.
That the COVID virus may have been significantly spread in Europe in March.
Yeah.
2019. A year ago, March. Remember the story I told you about my wife and I?
Yeah, you guys getting
that. And the illness that we had that is horribly, suspiciously exactly the same as a COVID outbreak?
Yep.
Well, dude, that week prior, I was down at the State House, and there were a lot of folks that were in there touring from Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I seriously believe, and I, till my dying day, I will believe that my wife and I were exposed and caught COVID, this mess, in early March 2019. Okay? And I'm guessing if they keep looking at this, this thing has probably been around since before the beginning of 2019.
Probably.
It was just building up, and it just happened to trip over at a certain point.
Yeah. Now,
and of course, We had that horrible 2019 flu season where people were coming in with all these flu symptoms that they couldn't quite identify as flu because it wasn't quite what the flu was.
That's that hit California in
November 2019.
Yeah. And that probably was COVID. I know people who were nurses. Mm-hmm. I know people in the medical community who did home health care.
Who were seeing a lot of it.
Who brought it home to their family, and I believe that people in my family had it as early as January, February, for that reason. And they got these, you know, they got the cough and the fever and nothing else. You know, not the whole litany.
Yeah, it didn't boil down.
Right, the loss of feeling in the feet and some of the other weird symptoms that came with that. But, you know, I'm looking at this, and one of the things that we're talking about doing an attenuated virus vaccine.
Right.
Okay, one of the ways that you attenuate a virus is to pass it through another organism. Eggs that are actually embryonated, in other words, right. Fertilized eggs,
yeah.
That kind of thing. And what we're doing right now, what we're beginning to discover, we're having cases, lots and lots and lots of quote-unquote cases. Cases being people that have antibodies, people, that, in other words, they have immunity to the thing and no symptoms, and people who are completely without symptoms. And we're still going on this hackneyed idea that somehow the people with no symptoms are spreaders. And they're not.
Yeah, they're not.
Because you're not shedding virus. If you're not coughing and you're not sneezing, you're not shedding virus, which means you can't give it to somebody else. You've got it in your body. It's in there. Your body is handling it. That's why you're asymptomatic. You're developing the antibodies, and it's like it's trying to multiply itself, and it's not. It's not working.
Right.
Now, what we're doing is, while that goes on, and what we're beginning to see is the beginning of mutation.
Yes.
Which is exactly what you do with an attenuated virus. You mutate the virus by passing it through another organism. Well, we're mutating the virus by passing it through ourselves. We've talked about this clear back in March. I said, look, one thing that happens as you go along with a virus is it mutates. And it eventually mutates itself out of business.
That's right.
That's what's happened with H1N1, H1N5, SARS, MERS. All these bad players aren't around. Or when they are around, there's really almost not too much to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people, unfortunately, they got it early. And many, not many, but a small percentage of them died.
Yep.
Mutated the virus for us. They did that.
You're right.
So basically what we're doing is we're building our own vaccine for ourselves.
Yep.
Again, this is a decision you have to make based on what you... And I understand there are people out there who are in a panic. Why? Because what do you read? Do you know how many deaths there have been of people under 18 from this thing?
Less than 50.
29.
Well, that's less than 50.
29. And yet what we're being told is that, if we don't, we can't open the schools because it'll spread. Okay, this isn't H1N1. H1N1 killed most of its deaths were under 60. This virus, most of the deaths, by far, a huge percentage, are over 60. Mm-hmm. And in fact, most of them are over 80. The average age of death is around 81. You know what that means? That means almost nobody on the lower end of the scale is dying. And almost everybody is over 80. You know, 85, 90, 95. And... In fact, the CDC has admitted that most of the people who died from this thing were going to be dead within the year anyway, probably.
Well, yeah, that's the high likelihood, the comorbidities. When they use that term, Chuck, the comorbidity, the idea of a morbidity means it's the thing that is killing you actively at the moment.
Yep.
So whether it's like with my father with COPD, or it's people with brain disorders like Alzheimer's, or it's people with cancer, or it's people with like congestive heart failure and heart disease or other ailments. If it's considered a morbidity, it means it's killing you actively right now and you will not be out living out another year.
Alcoholism and drug abuse. I know people who are quote-unquote healthy. These are the kind of things you read the stories. So-and-so mm-hmm. died, and she was completely healthy, and blah, and you read down 10 paragraphs, oh, yeah, she recovered from leukemia.
Yes.
That's not healthy.
No.
That's not a comorbidity.
Yes, it is.
Even if you recovered from it, it did its damage, and the treatments did their damage. The fact is, I am aware of someone in my immediate circle. This is the first person, by the way, in my someone who I knew personally, who has this thing, and they are recovering.
Okay.
But they did get it, and this person is probably 50 or under. Now, I thought I know something about this person that maybe some people who know him don't know, and I said, that is, he's a raging alcoholic. He's a functional alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the kind of guy who drinks a 24-pack in a day. That is a comorbidity. Now, how would the news media report it? He's a perfectly healthy person, and he got it. He's not perfectly healthy. He has an underlying disease condition. Whether they want to admit it or not. So you're hearing all these stories about all these healthy people who are getting it, and healthy people aren't getting it. Are there one or two scattered around? Probably. Wouldn't surprise me. And if you did an autopsy and did a close examination, you'll find out they had a hidden condition that nobody knew about.
Yep.
That's what's happening. So you're right. When you see that death curve is way, way, way down, we're counting cases. Now, is there disingenuousness in the way the cases are counted? Oh my gosh, Barry.
Massive amounts.
Listen. We have zip codes here in this county that cross over into Franklin, cross over into Fairfield, cross over into Knox, cross over into Delaware, cross over into, Muskingum. And I'm trying to think what county is Coshocton. Is that Coshocton County, isn't it? In any case, those zip codes, if you show up as a case in those zip codes that cross over county boundaries, you're counted in both counties.
Oh, lovely.
As separate cases.
As separate cases, that's right.
You're counted as a separate case every time you go in and get a test run. So if you've had four, and some people have had these because they insist you need to be retested.
Right.
Every time there's a retest, it's a new...
It's counted as a new case of COVID, yes.
If it comes out positive.
Right.
Or it's a new negative, which means it drives the numbers the other direction the wrong way. There are all kinds of circumstances under which cases are counted multiple times. It's stunning about how the numbers have been skewed by doing things like providing a bounty for hospitals that get a positive COVID case. You treat a positive COVID case, you get thousands of dollars in your coffers.
It's over 30,000. Well, if you have a COVID death, it's over 30-some thousand dollars.
Right. If you have put someone on a respirator, it's $13,000. Mm-hmm. If you have a positive case that gets treated but, you know, really simply sits in the hospital and waits for the symptoms to be over, it's $5,000. So we are essentially encouraging... And this actually goes, you know, in a number of things. When you subsidize the finding and the treatment of these diseases, you're going to find more cases. And that's what happened in New York. They were putting people on ventilators who actually, and the studies are beginning to confirm this, who are actually damaged to the point of death by the respirators when they didn't need them.
Right, because it's basically destroying their lungs.
Right.
Yes.
But the hospitals got... A, $13,000 for putting them on the respirator, and B, $30,000 for having them die while they were on the respirator. So they got $43,000 for that patient.
And you can see why that they want to drive those numbers up.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, here we are, Andrew Cuomo is basically being lionized as some big hero in this thing. He killed thousands of people in his state by putting them in nursing homes with the most vulnerable. Would you trust Andrew Cuomo to send somebody into a place where your grandmother is, and she's perfectly healthy and perfectly fine, but she's really old?
No, I absolutely wouldn't. Why would I?
Yeah. And the fact is that all the masks in the world are not going to stop that virus from passing in those places, because they're closed boxes, air circulation. You know, you might have, even if you have, and these places don't have these, but even if you have like pharmaceutical style air filters, mm-hmm. you know, 10 yes. class air, 100 class air, 1,000 class air, that kind of thing, where you can only pass certain number of particles and pass muster, you're still going to pass that virus from people who are truly ill and truly shedding.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what was happening. All those people were being shipped to, because they were under the guise of following CDC guidelines, supposedly, because we're going to be overwhelmed here with patients and we're going to overwhelm our hospitals. And if you watch the news for the last few weeks, they're telling you that Texas has this huge upsurge in cases, and the people in Houston are saying, there's a couple of hospitals with a lot of people in them, but for the rest, most part, the hospitals are more or less about as full as they normally are.
Just remember, it's a huge upturn in cases, not in hospitalizations or deaths. So.
And that's the bottom line. We're being essentially propagandized into following the edicts of people who are basically exercising power and maintaining their power base by exercising that power.
Well, you know, I'm glad you said that, because I want to segue us over into the next topic we're going to talk about today.
I was trying to find a way to
You did it. You did it. We don't prescript this stuff, folks, so he did it. The whole idea of exercising power. Well, that's become under a microscope this week, Chuck, here at in Ohio.
To say the least.
As we woke up Tuesday morning to the news that broke around 9 o'clock in the morning, that the Federal Bureau of Investigation had basically sent out SWAT teams, and they arrested 5 people in connection with what they claim, and have put before the courts as a charge, as a massive racketeering operation. Okay? Now, Chuck, when you think racketeering, what do you think of?
Racketeering is basically Al Capone and the boys selling illegal beer and running houses of prostitution and gambling.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Oh, if only it could have been so mundane as that.
Oh, I know.
No, what we had, and if you haven't heard this by now, by the time we're airing this on Saturday, welcome back from wherever you were at on vacation, because you must have been on vacation. No, the 5 people who were arrested for a $61 million racketeering and money laundering, pay-to-play, vote-buying scheme were, and I'll list them in order of importance from least to greatest. Juan Cespedes, part owner of the Oxley Group, a Columbus lobbying firm.
Yep.
Neil Clark, who most people really don't know, who is the head of Grant Street Consultants, who is one of the more powerful lobbying groups in Columbus, who was a former finance director for the Ohio Senate, and whom I, not jokingly, refer to, and Chuck has heard this before, as the Prince of Darkness.
Yes.
Neil Clark, who will lobby for Satan if he thought it would get him a payday. He lobbied for strip club owners. He's lobbied for gay rights groups. He's lobbied for everybody against anything that's moral and good. Call him the Prince of Darkness. The third person arrested, and folks, these people were arrested. They were taken away in cuffs, mostly, from their places where the FBI swarmed in to get them. They weren't all together. They were in different places. The third person is someone who our listeners might have a remote familiarity with, because I think I might have mentioned his name a couple times before. Is a guy named Jeff Longstreth. Now, Jeff Longstreth has been actually, I've known Jeff for 20 years, because he came in a little bit later. He was a staffer at one time in the House. He then went out and he ran a couple of campaigns. He then became a lobbyist and had his own little group where he was lobbying for some different interests. And then he became basically the political guy for a certain politician who will be named here momentarily. But Jeff's been around the State House for a long time, and he's kind of a fixer. Okay. The next individual is another lobbyist, somebody who also our listeners have heard us utter his name in utter contempt and vileness before. He's the former chairman of the Ohio Republican Party when John Kasich was governor. His name's Matt Borges. And Matt Borges is no stranger to corruption and controversy, having had a previous run-in with doing things illegally and trying to get something for nothing, or to, let's say, enrich those people who were enriching him and his interests when he was the chief of staff for then-Treasurer Joe Dieters. He got busted for that, for steering work from the treasurer's office to certain folks who were doing kickbacks. So he's already been under the mud. This one's even bigger, okay? So he was intricately involved in this one. And who was the ringleader of this whole thing? Who is at the top of this pyramid of corruption? None other than current, which won't be much longer.
Temporarily current.
Speaker of the Ohio House of Representatives, Representative Larry Householder of Perry County, who basically created this massive monstrosity working with Borges, Cespedes, Clark, and his buddy Jeff Longstreth to create multiple campaign accounts and funds that were receiving tens of millions of dollars from a certain entity. That entity, which wasn't specifically named in the charge, but everybody knows who it is around the State House, First Energy Solutions of Northeast Ohio, who came to the legislature asking for them to pass a law to protect their nuclear power plants. Now, full disclosure, I was in full support of that bill.
Yeah.
And I wrote an article in the Columbus Dispatch as the reason why we needed to have more energy independence, and we needed to keep nuclear in the mix and not rely so much on the social justice warrior / politically correct idea of wind and solar, which is basically just a subsidy mill.
Right.
It's a slush fund in its own right. And so I was in support of this bill. I still think it's a good idea for us to have a healthy portfolio of energy production, which includes the nuclear. So I didn't have any problem with them putting a bill in place to keep the two nuclear plants from being bankrupted and shuttered. All right. But Larry Householder, who, when he was speaker previously in the early 2000s, from 2001 to 2004, was under FBI investigation then for the potential of setting up these little Ponzi schemes where special interests who wanted something would give him lots and lots of money, and if he would guide and get them a vote. Well, back then, I think it was the gambling lobby, and he couldn't quite deliver for that because he couldn't quite get enough people to want to support expanding gambling in the state of Ohio by statute. That's the reason why they had to go to the ballot later in order to get that done.
And that took
and they had to go like four times to
four
the ballot.
Times to get
four
it
times
done.
To the ballot to finally get all these little racinos that we've got around the state. Larry probably still had a piece of some of that, but he didn't. He never. He was investigated by the FBI then, but he was never indicted. This time around, it was $61 million of actual money that flowed through from First Energy and their subordinate companies, written through at the behest of Matt Borges, Juan Cespedes, Neil Clark, Jeff Longstreth, and Larry Householder in order to guarantee that Larry would get introduced, guide through, get a vote, and then strong arm the Senate in order to get this bill through. Well, they did. It happened. So a year ago in 2019, the bill passed, got through. Well, now we're coming to find out that, well, for householder to promise them a bill in exchange for tens of millions of dollars of money that went into campaign coffers, his and others, was then run through five different accounts that Longstreth controlled so that it could be laundered and then turned around and used to fund media operations and mailers and things for candidates that supported householders so that he could get people in who he knew would vote for not only this bill, but for him as speaker. Personally benefited from it because some of it went to the utilization for him and some of his private interests. And I think what the kicker was, and maybe the reason why the FBI moved when they did, was his political fixer, Longstreth, who was controlling these five accounts, moved $1 million over into a private brokerage account that is his. And Chuck, you know what a brokerage account is.
Yeah.
It's basically your stock account.
Yes.
So basically he paid himself $1 million of this dirty money. And I think that may have been the match,
the impetus, yeah.
The match that got lit to get the FBI to go. Well, Tuesday morning they descended on all of them. They put them all in handcuffs and they arraigned them before a federal judge because they have violated at least five different federal statutes and a state law in setting up this little pay-to-play scheme.
Oh, there's all kinds of stuff. Wire fraud.
Oh, wire fraud, you know, yeah. Money laundering.
I mentioned money laundering.
Folks, it's an 82-page charging document that they used to get the courts to give. They went to the federal court in order to get them to give them the warrants for the arrests.
Yeah.
It's online. It's public. I read it. It's 82 pages. I'm laughing because it has the only people who are named are those five individuals. And, of course, they talk about Company A and Company B and blah, 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 and Representatives 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and Staffer 1, and Associate 8, 1, 2, and 3. I can't publicly say anything about it, but I've almost filled in every name for every one of those based on what the FBI actually showed in that charge document. And I'm like, oh, I know who they're talking about there. That's this one.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's this one.
So. Yeah. Well, those people aren't named because, A, it would be embarrassing for them. B, they're hoping that they roll.
Oh, I'm sure that they're hoping that many of them
roll. In fact, many of them probably already rolled.
Like a Weeble Wobble. I'm sure that they're rolling right on
because
down the road.
Because you and I both know what staffers get paid over there. It ain't worth it to be loyal.
Well, I guess if you were getting paid on the side from this slush fund,
they'd have to pay an awful lot of money to keep somebody from going.
The only thing, you know, I saw this, and I have been telling my clients and friends for a long time that this is no surprise. This is how the game this is how the game gets played around there. And Larry Householder is not the first one to do this. If you remember, Cliff Rosenberger got under FBI, is still
That's
under
right.
FBI investigation, although they haven't finalized anything on him yet. He's still under FBI investigation and had to step down as speaker because of pay-to-play he was doing.
The guy just
when he got recorded on a wire.
The guy just before Larry.
Yeah, Ryan Smith. Honestly, never to get caught for pay-to-play. But
that's right. Cliff Rosenberger.
He was tied in with Rosenberger because of his being basically a golden child for Rosenberger's fat calf, Jenny Reagan, who was funding all the shenanigans. So we've had for a while now, Chuck, we've had the Republican parties in somewhat of a shambles in Ohio. Now, the interesting thing is, and I think that this is fun, is that one of the guys I mentioned, Matt Borges, the former Ohio Republican Party chair, was doing a little side gig. Now, so Cespedes and Borges both were the registered lobbyists for First Energy. Okay, and their subsidiaries. So they were the guys who were the links back to the companies who wanted to get this bill done, and they were telling the companies what they needed to do to get it done, which was go pay so much money, put so much in an account to run a ballot issue. Of course, once the bill passed, you had groups like Common Cause and the Sierra Club and others who basically, oh, they didn't like the idea because, well, it was going to hurt their wind and solar little deal. And so they were trying to get it on a referendum on the ballot. Well, they got First Energy to pass through their lobbyists to pass down to these accounts who then Neil Clark and others used to pay out, I believe it was up to $2 million in order to retain ballot or signature collection companies. These are folks around the country who do this stuff for ballot initiatives where they hire people at so many dollars per signature and they go and they tell right. you, we can get you this. You tell us how many rough signatures you need. We can guarantee you we can get them. And they charge these groups lots of money for that. Well, Clark went around. He had the brilliant idea, as the charge reveals, to go around and use anywhere from $10,000 to like $150,000 per company to retain them so that they would have a conflict of interest so that they couldn't work for the repeal folks and collect signatures, which put them at a disadvantage in order to collect enough signatures to get on the ballot. Does it stink? Yeah. Is it illegal to do that? Well, it wouldn't have been if you hadn't been using particular monies and trying to hide the fact that those monies were coming from that entity by running it through a C4.
Yeah, it's a tainted money.
Yeah, when you hear the words Generation Now, that was Larry Householder's personal control C4 where all the money was being dumped in so then the donors' names would never appear. And then they funneled that money. Longstreth funnels the money out to his five accounts in order to buy the media, pay this, send the money over to campaign coffers, do all the things that they needed to do in order to create this whole scheme.
Well, one thing that we got to I want to point out is that certain types will try to say, well, this shows the corruption in the conservative community. And the first thing I would say is almost, but not quite to a man, these guys are not conservative by any stretch of the imagination. They are Republicans.
You're right. I didn't get to what I was saying about Matt Borges. Matt Borges had another little side project. His side project, he was running a super PAC with a guy by the name of Anthony Scaramucci. Do you remember that name?
Oh, my gosh.
Trump's former press secretary who lasted about 11 days, I think. They were running a super PAC raising money to defeat Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Matt Borges, the former Republican Party chairman, is a never-Trumper. Well, gee, that super PAC, I think, is going to go up in flames, just like Matt Borges' career is going up in flames. And it couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
So if you hear that this is a bunch of conservatives, oh, no, they're Kasich, except for Kasich. Larry Householder.
Yeah, Kasich, mostly Kasich loyalists and never-Trumpers.
We're sorry, folks, because we know what the listening area here is. But Larry is an equal opportunity grifter. He took the money. It's not the first time he's taken the money. This is the first time he really got caught with his hands in the cookie jar. And you know, if you like him, I understand. We do tend to get attached to the guys who do the things we want them to do, but unfortunately, it's looking pretty much like he's a crook.
Now, I would say we will exercise legitimate caution to say that everyone is entitled to be believed as innocent until proven guilty. But if you've read that 82-page charge, there are too many specifics, too many text messages going back and forth, too many wire transfers, and too many direct contacts between players. They say where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah.
Well, usually sometimes when there's smoke, there's a gun that has already been fired.
Yes.
And this time around, it's looking like that gun was shot.
Yeah. And let me tell you, John Kasich, who basically is doing, once again, committing political suicide by endorsing Joe Biden.
And speaking at the Democratic National Convention.
Will have, I'm not accusing him of being involved in this, but he will have gotten some of this PAC money. No doubt. John Kasich was the recipient of some of this PAC money. That happens all the time. People get PAC money, they don't know where it comes from. I'm not blaming him for that, but I'm looking at his playmates. These are his playmates. This is what you get when you elect guys like John Kasich.
Borges was the guy that Kasich personally put in as the Republican Party chairman.
Bingo.
So, just to let you know.
And that being said, we are out of time. You know what we think, and we want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.